finding them on the papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it'll go. Talk radio. Double talk is all you get, and you wanna hear it straight.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller. We'll be with you live in the studios of Republic Broadcasting Network on this 26th day of March, 2007. It is a Monday, ladies and gentlemen. And coming up in this first hour, Martin Dillon. He just recently did an article in American Free Press about America accused of bankrolling anti-U.S. insurgents inside Iraq. Get into that issue. And, you know, you just never know what you're going to find, ladies and gentlemen, when you read your hometown newspaper. New York police spied on protesters. Well, they just didn't spy on them. Officials visited seven states ahead of the 2004 GOP convention. This is the New York City Police Department in seven different states, and also, oh, that's right, in Europe. Now, when you look at these, you know, they included street theater companies, church groups, anti-war organizations, as well as environmentalists and people opposed to the death penalty, globalization, and other governmental policies. These are police officers from New York City PD. And they were in states like California, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montreal, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oregon, Tennessee, Washington, and Texas, and as I said, in Europe. Now, when did they do this operation? In 2003. Citing the fresh horrors of September 11th attacks and the prospect of future terrorism, to date, as this article says, to date, as the boundaries of the department's expanded powers continue to be debated, police officials have provided only glimpses of the new intelligence gathering. So, if you got a PD, I guess, in Cincinnapolis, anywhere, any state USA, I'm sure you could probably get government grants and start sharing information and snooping, pooping on everybody. You know, we're not even talking about the feds here. We're talking about the Keystone Corporate Coffer Corporation cops in New York City. Just taking a look around. You know, you thought there was, I was at the Republican National Convention back in 2004. You want to talk about a police presence? Oh, buddy. I mean, all different agencies, Fed agencies, standing around with MP5s looking really intimidating. You know, it was just absolutely insane. You know, why don't they just televise this stuff? Forget the idiots that show up at these rallies. Just televise the thing. You know, put your laugh tracks and your applause tracks in there. You know, we can do this, and we can put them in underground bunkers with TV cameras. You know, even a bunker buster or a nuclear bomb couldn't get at them. You know, save us the embarrassment of being spied on. I mean, you just never know what they're going to admit to you in the paper. By the way, that story, you might want to Google it, New York Times, Jim Dwyer. Officers visited several states ahead of the 2004 GOP convention. We'll take the break here, be back on the other side with Martin Dillon right after this short break for Republic Broadcasting Network, ladies and gentlemen, on this Monday afternoon.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. the ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYwellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long-life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush-proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, folks, with us today, Martin Dillon. Martin, I did not get a bio from you, so if you would, for the purpose of the listeners finding out, you're a writer, an author.
Sure, yes.
Tell the listeners what you've been doing, what you've been writing, and where they can find what you've been writing.
Okay, I'll try and make a good confession, like any good writer would do, I guess. Well, John, really, a lot of books that I've written over the years began when I was a young journalist. I was a journalist in Ireland for many years, and then moved into broadcasting. I was a print journalist, and then I moved into broadcasting and began working for the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. So I worked in news, and I also then worked in current affairs. And finally, my last job at the BBC in London was with their history department, the department called Time Watch, and they made sort of 1 hour and 2 hour history documentaries. So it was BBC Two Television. That was my last job. But during that period, and before I moved to the United States, I lived in France for 5 or 6 years. Finish some other books. Some of my books, for instance, for any of your listeners, would include names like the Dirty War, which really is about sort of undercover strategies in a military conflict, particularly in relation to counterinsurgency conflicts. There's also a book called The Shankill Butchers, which was a study of mass murder, and really concerns the kind of killings which are taking place in Iraq at the moment that we hear about in the news. But if you've ever sort of done any work in this kind of field as I've done, when I hear about bodies being found, tortured bodies in Iraq, it reminds me of the book that I wrote on the Ireland conflict called The Shankill Butchers, which really was about a group of murderers who killed over 30 people. And they operated as a kind of small gang. And within the gang itself, they had a kind of code of silence. And there was a leader with a sort of an aggressive psychopath personality. But all of them, in a way, had this sort of view of the enemy, that the enemy was less than human. And so it was easy for them to kill people, to torture people. And mostly it killed them with butcher's knives, hence the name of the book, The Shankill Butchers. One of the last books that I wrote in recent times was called The Trigger Men, which was a study of serious, sort of, I suppose, killers, not really serial killers, but very prominent killers in the Ireland conflict on both sides of the conflict. And also I co-authored a book which was called The Assassination of Robert Maxwell, Israel's Super Spy. So I guess really, if you think about it, I've been sort of writing since I was about 18 years of age, and I've just finished my latest book, which is called, believe it or not, Romantics, Eccentrics, and Just Plain Fruitcakes. So for the first time, I've taken over the past 2 years the time out to write a book which is not about conflict at all.
Well,
so I hope that gives your listeners a kind of, I suppose, snapshot into my life.
Then when you were with the BBC, did you notice, and how exactly, I had never spoken to anybody that's internally worked, or the internal workings, I should say, of the BBC. And a lot of people here in this country, obviously, because we have a managed or controlled media, if anybody inside the United States wants any news, even what's going on inside this country, they can go to BBC, they can go to other news outlets. But I'm sure that the news is managed in England as well as here in the United States. What indications did you see when you were with the BBC that was the case?
Well, probably to a lesser extent. One of the interesting things about the BBC is that it's funded by public subscription. In other words, if you live in the United Kingdom, you pay a license fee, which finances the BBC. Of course, in any society, you're going to find that there are pressures on any broadcasting organization. And because the British government has the power to increase that license fee or not to increase it, governments can, to some extent, put pressure on the British Broadcasting Corporation. And that has happened more so in recent times, particularly with the Tony Blair government. And it has been a kind of mirror action in many ways of what has been going on within the United States. But I would have to say about the BBC, I mean, I watch BBC World Service, and I think I get a much broader and much sharper analysis of what's going on in the world. The BBC is a very fine organization. I mean, what you have is you have a basic thesis, which in many ways was put into print by one of the founders of the organization, Lord Reith. And what Reith said was that, you know, you have to create a sense of balance in your broadcasting output. And that balance doesn't mean that every program that you do, you have to sort of say, well, 50% of the content of this program has to reflect one side and 50% the other side. Reith's attitude really was that over a period of time, if you're thoughtful, if you're transparent, and if you have a sense of fairness, then balance will create itself. In other words, over the whole output, over a period of time, whatever you're reflecting, whether it's a conflict, whether it's something in your own society, you will present for the public, for listeners, for viewers, a balanced analysis. And I think the BBC, in many ways, I had my disagreements with the BBC, but, you know, at the same time, I would think overall that the BBC has been a marvelous broadcasting organization. And that in many ways it is much more concerned about its news and current affairs output than a lot of the channels here in the United States. I mean, here I think there's a greater sort of preoccupation with Paris Hilton and with you know, trivia than there is with what's going on in the world.
Well,
that doesn't serve America. It doesn't serve the American public because it means that people are not well informed.
Well, I woke up this morning. The first thing that I do is watch the propagandist organizations, CNN, Headline News, or One of the most egregious is Fox News, Rupert Murdoch's out
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Wherever they got that phrase from, who knows?
Hey, well, they say fair and balanced. We report, you decide. No, they decide what they're going to report on. And what I found particularly interesting, especially about U.S. news media outlets, is they'll give you the propaganda, and then they'll do polls to see if their propaganda is taking. You know, if they're spinning the story the correct way, they'll do their polls and then announce the polls. It's
the most... two things here. Yeah, I tend to agree. One of the things here is the preoccupation with trivia. I mean, there's just a mountain of it. And every day, I mean, it just hits you as soon as you turn on your television. I mean, if I get up in the morning, I will read some of the European newspapers. And in the evenings, I will watch BBC World Service News. And I find, and this is very interesting, I find that if I go online in the morning and I read the Times of London, the Independent, the Guardian, the Daily Telegraph, if I look through those papers, I learn more about what's going on in the world than I learn from the New York Times, from the Washington Post, or from my local television output, which includes CNN.
Well, the other newspapers that you just referenced in England... which do you think is the most, how should I say, let me steal Fox's news tagline, which is the most fair and balanced?
I think you can't go far wrong if you read the Times, you read the Independent, you read the Guardian. You're looking at across a sort of a spectrum there, which would be, you know, slightly left center, the center, and sort of slightly the right of center. But you, at the same time, I think what you're getting is you're getting a lot more news than you're actually getting here. I mean, for example, I was saying to a friend of mine recently, I could find out there are 50 people that have just been killed in Baghdad when I sort of go online and I read British newspapers, and it maybe takes me 24 hours to see that same news floating to the surface here in the United States. And I sort of say to myself, well, why is it? You know, I'm reading something in the morning which says, you know, five U.S. soldiers have been killed in Baghdad and Anbar province, and yet it's not there in my New York Times. And what people will say here is, well, that's because the New York Times goes to bed early. Well, the CNN doesn't. It's a 24-hour news service. So is Fox.
Yes.
And yet it is not there.
And by the way, their tagline is the most trusted in news.
Oh, well, it's just not true. I mean, the thing about it is that I think if you look at the way in which the media here folded in the run-up to the war in Iraq, it's probably history, I think, will look upon this period in terms of the U.S. media much more critically than I think at any time in 20th century history, because of the way the media allowed itself to be battered and bruised bad administration that said, you know, if you're not with us, you're part of the enemy.
Yeah, it
wasn't that you're unpatriotic. It was that what you're actually doing is you're undermining, you know, you're undermining our cause. And I think that is wrong. I think the media, you know, here lost its backbone. I mean, that was my personal feeling.
If they ever had one.
You've lived in this country a lot longer than I have. I've been very disappointed. I find that European journalism is much tougher, and also that it gives us a sharp analysis of what's going on in the world.
We got a break coming up here in just a couple of minutes, and I want to get into Iraq here, the insurgency inside of Iraq.
Sure,
and
sure.
Possibly... the neocons, and specifically Mr. Dick Cheney.
You mean the shadow president?
Yes, the shadow president, the real occupier of the throne in Washington D.C.
He's the real brain. I mean, it's not Karl Rove.
No, and we were seeing a lot of the run up here just a couple of days. Evidently, there has been some admission, if you can believe the newspapers that are not controlled. That these 15 British soldiers, these Marines, were actually in Iranian waters, and that's why they were detained.
It's possible. I mean, let's be honest about it. You have to take what you're hearing with a very large, I would say, a spoonful of salt. Very often, particularly when you're getting the information from governments, and you're not getting it from journalists on the scene.
Yes, we here in this country, Martin, we trust our government and our news services. They would never lie to us.
Of course not.
All right, we'll take this break. Short break for the network. We'll be right back here with Martin Dillon, formerly with the BBC. We're going to talk about Iraq anti-U.S. insurgents, how they're being bankrolled, and who might be doing it. We'll be right back.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Ah. Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole Salt Lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products, created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
The Washington Post, you mentioned this, Martin, and they actually did a story here back in October. David Brown did the story, talking about the United States military, the Pentagon, the White House, you name it, talking about underreporting the deaths in Iraq. And they put it, or at least David Brown did, an estimated 655,000 excess deaths. This is what the Pentagon likes to call people that aren't supposed to die.
Collateral damage.
Yeah, or collateral damage. And he said that basically the government, or at least Bush, gave in a speech back in December of last year that there was an estimated 30,000 civilian deaths, and this writer said it might be higher than 20 times that amount. And
this goes to the heart of, I think, a very important day. Well, there are two issues. One, I think, is that information is a weapon in modern warfare. For that reason, very often that within sort of counterinsurgency outfits, you can have what are loosely called information policy departments or units. And their job really is to provide stories which can be bogus. I mean, it could be manipulation of the facts. It could be to insert stories into the mainstream media. Because really, the aim and why information is so important, you don't only want to sort of deceive the enemy with information. You also need to keep everyone else on board. In other words, you've got to keep your own people, your own supporters on board. So very often what you may well do is not, either not tell them the truth or fabricate the stories which make your participation in a particular conflict look interesting. The other thing is this, that when you don't have journalists on the ground, then the information that you receive can be either manipulated, it can be distorted, it can be funneled through a kind of mechanism whereby it's transformed into something else, and you're never going to know. I mean, one of the big problems with conflicts like Iraq and also Afghanistan is that it's very difficult for journalists to operate on the ground. So you have this system where they're embedded. Well, what does that mean, really?
I was just going to say, what is an embed?
Well, it means really that, in a sense, that they're subjected to the wiles of whoever is in a position to take them somewhere. In other words, you might want to go somewhere, but that really doesn't suit the military because they don't really want you to go there. So, you know, they're going to take you somewhere else. I'll give an example of it. And I think one of the finest examples was during the Falklands War. I think the British have always been very, very good at fighting insurgencies because they had a whole history doing it. And all you've got to do is look at Kenya. You look at Aden, Cyprus. The British were always fighting these, what they call these colonial emergencies during their empire days. So the British knew a lot about counterinsurgency because they're always dealing with insurgencies from the local populations of the countries that they controlled, that colonized. And I think when the Falklands War came along, what the British did was they allowed journalists access to the sort of the battle area, not always the battle zone. And so journalists were aboard ships that were sailing to the Falklands, but they were under the control of intelligence officers who were able to monitor, right, what those journalists were writing, also able to restrict the information that journalists had access to. And for me, it was one of the first examples of media control, of the control of the news. And that was the Thatcher administration at the time. But it wasn't even so much Thatcher herself sitting in 10th Downing Street. I mean, this was the military. And the extension of that really was the first Gulf War. Where, you know, I used to joke that when he said that you had a pool of journalists, they were journalists actually sitting by a pool at a hotel waiting for someone to come in and say, there's a video of another cruise missile that's just hit its target in Baghdad. So people, you know, weren't really out on the scene. I mean, I had a buddy who was involved in some work during the first Gulf War, the days after the conflict ended, where, you know, they were burying a lot of bodies in the desert, and they were using mechanical diggers to do it. I mean, there are a lot of Iraqis killed. We really never got the full number, and Saddam didn't want to tell anybody how many of his own people were killed because journalists weren't given access to the front lines. Military intelligence was controlling the information, and everybody loved it. I mean, if you look at it, it was the first video war.
That's right.
You know, it's one of the things really that, you know, you have to really have a very thick skin and be very skeptical.
Well,
when you're looking at the kind of information that very often has been fed out of the green zone or somewhere else, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and here in the United States, we had Vietnam, which was our first television war. During the evening news, whether it was ABC, NBC, or CBS. You know, people would wonder why you would see the exact same news story. I mean, and this was pretty amazing for people to fathom that why they were watching one, whether it be Walrus Crankcase or whatever. You would be listening to one story, you'd flip over to the other national news program, and they'd be doing the exact same story at the exact same time.
There's also, I think, a kind of weariness eventually. You know, what you have is you have the news all the time, and they have the view within a lot of the networks. So, well, don't depress people. You know, they've had enough of this. You know, don't, let's not overload them today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
there's also the other thing, too, that actually I think concerns me greatly in the world that we live in, and I used to argue this point at the BBC when I was a senior editor, was that very often you have what I call is a reflex broadcasting output.
All right.
In other words, you've got the news, but you never have anything behind it.
Hang on to that thought. We've got to take a break here. We've got a long segment coming up. You can only spend an hour with us today, and I appreciate you doing that. Martin Dillon, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420. And see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420. Or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
Martin, I reported this last week on the program. We had received word that the Russian ambassadors in Iran have packed up and gone home. The last time that this happened in Iraq, about 10, 11 days later, we started bombing the snot out of Iraq. We saw just a couple of days ago the news story about the 15 British Marines taken into custody for violating Iran's waters. We have in the newspapers and all over the news, UN orders sanctions against Iran, and it's the same reasons as given before, because of their nuclear enrichment of uranium, that they're going to build bombs and whatever else.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, they are within the guidelines of the treaty that they signed on to, the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They have not violated any of that whatsoever. And it apparently, we need to go into Iran, we need to go into Syria, because all these insurgents that are flooding into Iraq, just making our job over there so much harder that we shouldn't have been there in the first place, any more than jolly old England should have been there. And people wonder how the countries, you look at Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, well, thanks to the British government, we now see the geographic maps laid out, thanks to them. Now it's our turn to be in there. We've killed well over, our estimates are well over 1 million Iraqis, and this is more than 500 people a day dying, and these are women and children, non-combatants. But more importantly, we don't see the stories about depleted uranium. We don't see the birth defects. We don't see the real news coming out of there. George Bush is under a lot of heat, so is his attorney general. There's, I don't know what is keeping this man in office right now.
Well, one of the things that, I mean, you just made a point just before the break, was the word I used, which was reflex. And really what I was talking about, and I think it's an interesting thesis, and it's one that I'm quite happy to sort of develop. What we get very often, and what we, you know, watch either on our television screens or very often see in newspapers, is what I call sort of reflex material. In other words, there's stuff pumped out from official sources, and it's the, you know, the 30 people died today in Baghdad. Now, you know, unless you have a lot more investigative work by journalists, by the media, we're not going to know at any point in time what's really happening in the world in which we live. An example I mentioned when I began today was a book I wrote called The Shankill Butchers. Now, it took, how long did it take people to start talking about the fact that there was a civil war going on and that you had this sort of tribal conflict between Sunnis and Shiites in Iraq? Did it take sort of hundreds of people being sort of slaughtered? And the thing about it is that, you know, I don't know, probably most of your listeners today have never seen a tortured body. And it takes a journalist to be able to tell you that. What happens? How many people are sort of being brought into places, you know, secret prisons in parts of Iraq where their kneecaps are being drilled, where they're being tortured, where they're being burned, right, with red-hot pokers. And a lot of this torture really is either to obtain information very often which people don't have, are just out of a terrible, terrible hatred. And this has been going on for the past 2 years. I mean, this war has been raging, and the United States military is in the middle of it, not knowing how to cope with it. And the thing about it is, how long did it take for us to learn about that? And part of the reason is that there isn't enough investigative work done. So very often, we're not quite sure where we are. We just get the figures, another 5 people, another 50 people killed. But we don't know very often. We're not told why it's happening. And I think the Bush administration didn't want people to realize that what they had done by going in there was to create an atmosphere in which a civil war was more likely. And it became more likely because of the U.S. occupation of Iraq. There's no doubt about that. And we weren't told, I mean, what kind of country we were going into. I mean, the American public was never really told anything about Iraq, just that there was a guy called Saddam Hussein and he had weapons of mass destruction and there might be a mushroom cloud over, you know, an American city. We were given this kind of BS, that people call it, and they're right. But nobody did the work. The media fell into the trap of just sort of repeating all this material. And now we're sort of scrambling to find out, well, what kind of Iraq did we invade? What has happened since we invaded it? What has been the outcome? Did the American public weren't told that the moment that we give the Shias all the power they want in Iraq, they will just align themselves with Iran because Iran is also Shiite. This is Shia Muslim, right? Shia Islam. And it extends into Lebanon, Hezbollah. The rest of the Islamic world is Arab, Sunni Arab. So who's financing the Sunnis? Our friends in Saudi Arabia. Right, probably our friends in Pakistan. I mean, the thing about it is that there's never enough information, proper information given to people. And that's where journalism fails us, because the politicians are not going to tell us. I don't think George Bush had ever looked at Iraq on a map. I mean, had he spoken to sort of some British historians, they might have told him about the difficulties going into a country like Iraq.
But we,
we have neocons talking about regime change in Syria and regime change in Iran. I mean, really? I mean, to expand this conflict into Iran, I mean, would just create, I mean, I think, an ungovernable Middle East. And that wouldn't just be for us. That would be for everybody who's there, every other government.
Well, I've said this repeatedly. Martin, I've said this repeatedly. What we're doing is following the roadmap to peace according to Israel.
Well, Israel's got its own agenda. I mean, the one thing that people forget about Israel is that it's always Israel first. And that's every Israeli has that sort of mentality. It's the code of Mossad. It's Israel first. Israel has always had its own agenda. I mean, if you take a look back at the Iran-Iraq war, the Israelis feared Saddam more than they feared the Ayatollah Khamenei. And so what they did was they supplied the Ayatollah Khamenei's forces with parts for American weapons. And those American weapons had been bought by Khamenei's predecessor, the Shah, who was an American ally.
Right.
And they then, as
installed by the CIA, by the way.
Sorry?
Shah of Iran was installed by the CIA. When
of
you
course.
Got the Ayatollah Khamenei, he went the opposite direction of the Shah.
But who are we supporting in that war? We were actually, we were supporting Saddam Hussein, and so were the British. We were supplying him with intelligence from AWACS that we had in the Middle East. They were being flown by the Saudis. We were supplying him with parts for weapons, and we were also supplying him with chemicals that he used in his chemical weapons. So, you know, and also, of course, we were encouraged by Israel to try and do a deal with Iran, which fell apart, to supply them with weapons for the release of American hostages held by Hezbollah in Beirut. You know, the thing about it is that you look at this kind of mess, and the Middle East really is not a place that you want to be in. Because it has never worked. Israel will always be meddling because Israel is there. And oh, if you take a look at the debacle in Lebanon last year, where the great sort of vaunted Israeli military was all but defeated by a guerrilla army, I mean, America didn't do itself a lot of favors by saying, just keep bombing, where Israel was punishing the population of Lebanon. That's one thing, you're fighting your enemy. It's another thing, you know, using the population as a kind of, you know, punching bag. And this is the problem, and America is probably seen or perceived to be too close to Israel's foreign policy objectives. Israel's foreign policy does not necessarily always suit America's, which is why the Europeans very often distance themselves. They don't have the same kind of alignment with Israel. I mean, nobody argues that Israel doesn't have the right to sort of defend its own borders and the right to exist, but that is a different issue altogether. The much broader issue of whether, in fact, Israel's view of the Middle East is the one that America should adopt. That's a different issue for me.
All right, let's go to the phones here. Fred in Pennsylvania. Thanks for holding, Fred.
Hi. I had heard that there were two actual Israeli aerial sorties around 2005, and that the U.S. warplanes actually had to turn the Israeli warplanes back over over Jordan or Iraq. They were on their way to Iran.
It's hard to know. I mean, one of the things really is that I wouldn't necessarily think that would be true. Everything would be dealt with on the basis of diplomacy. We'd never get to the point where you're turning back planes in the air. Because Israel would not strike at Iran without consulting the United States of America, believe it or not. Then again, I mean, if Israel really felt threatened and it felt the United States was sort of going to walk away from it as an ally, Israel would probably say, well, it's Israel first, and we will take out whatever we need to, whatever threat we perceive close to our borders. The difficulty, really, I think, with Iran is that Israel doesn't want to be seen to be going it alone. Which is one of the reasons why Israel, over the past couple of years, has tried to condition opinion towards Iran, whereby it has, in many ways, tried to influence the opinion within the United States itself to support the view that Iran is a threat.
I mean, now we only hear about Iran from the networks because they only hear about it in a certain way. They call it the renegade country, and I don't want to hear that. I only want to hear the facts of the conflict. I don't want to hear that kind of characterization.
What you're not hearing really is that, you know, if Bush had sort of, you know, just backed off his sort of cowboy rhetoric, and I'm talking about the kind of rhetoric, axis of evil, after 9/11, Iran wanted to join the United States in taking down al-Qaeda and the Taliban for one simple reason, that the Iranians hate al-Qaeda. And they hate the Taliban because the Taliban and al-Qaeda regard Iranians, who are Shiites, they regard them as infidels. And in many ways, Iran helped the United States in dealing with the Taliban in Afghanistan. But the Bush administration was too locked into the sort of neocon thesis that, you know, we're going to have to, we're dealing with Iraq first, but as part of a kind of domino theory that, you know, and then we'll deal with Syria and we'll deal with Iran as well. You know, the American military is bogged down in Iraq at the moment, fighting an insurgency, that any military strategist will tell you. I mean, it's not something that you're going to win, and certainly not in the kind of conflict that is taking place in Iraq at the moment, where you have both a civil war, where you have a country which at any stage could sort of explode in the north as well, where the Kurds are living, and also where you've got insurgents being financed from outside. And I'm not talking about al-Qaeda here.
And I still don't even know, I haven't gotten an answer on exactly how is this oil produced, exported, which almost all of Iraq's oil is, and what are the money flows to the revenues from this oil? I've gotten some answers from Bob Chapman and, you know, the usual people who are mainstream experts. But I'm not getting any definitive answers on where are the revenues going from the Iraqi oil, and they're huge, even with the inefficiency of their exports.
Well, I think what you've got is you've got several things happening here. You've got billions can't even be accounted for through what they call wasteful spending, which really means theft. You've got all of that aid that has gone in. You've got the money that. Probably somewhere around maybe 170 billions that was Iraqi money anyway, right, that was seized. And you've also got the Iraqi government, you know, if you can really call it a government at the moment, that is sitting on something like 20 to 30 billion that it hasn't even touched. And that, you know, questions are now being asked about that. And also, oil hasn't flowed the way it should have flowed because they haven't been able to protect the integrity of the pipeline, and particularly the pipeline, not so much the refineries. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, the whole projection initially that, you know, Iraqi oil would pay for the occupation was another piece of fiction because nobody really had worked out what was going to happen. I mean, you've got a president who says mission accomplished, and you've got a military that doesn't even sort of see the writing on the wall. There's nothing unusual about this. I had a friend who was the secretary of a very famous British counterinsurgency expert called Thompson. And before the United States military went into Vietnam after the defeat of the French, I mean, Thompson actually went along and he spoke to some of the American military, senior American military figures going into Vietnam, and he said, you know, we British know a lot about insurgencies. We can help you. And they said, yeah, we don't need your help. We can take care of this. And it was that sort of attitude, I think, initially in Iraq, we can take care of this. But now when you've got 160,000 American troops in a civil war situation, trying to be a peacemaker, and troops are not really geared or trained to be policemen, and they're in a situation where they, you know, they can't recognize the enemy. Armies in situations like that end up either doing things that they shouldn't really be doing at all, or like Haditha, for instance, right, where the Iraqi civilians were killed, or just being able to cope or taking too many casualties. It's, you know, the whole thing is very, very messy. And that is a difficulty for any army. An army likes to know that its enemy is up front. There it is. There's the battlefield. It's very clear. The enemy is definable. In Iraq, the enemy is not definable because it could be Shiites. They don't really like the American occupation. It could be Sunnis. It could be al-Qaeda.
And they're only the only industry that Iraq has, which is the export of crude oil, is way down. It's down.
Sure.
Would you say it's down 75%? Would you say it's down 80%?
Well, it's got to be. It's got to be anyway. Somewhere between the 50 to the 75 has to be.
And there's and the secrecy that has enveloped that, and the fact that these local leaders are, have a big role in this. We can't find out the facts.
It's a country where corruption is endemic. And when corruption's endemic, it doesn't matter if you can put a government in there. What you're going to find at every level, you're going to find, you know, corruption becoming institutionalized. I'll give an example, which is, you know, a kind of parallel in a way. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, you find that a lot of sort of former Soviet satellite countries, whether it was Romania, Bulgaria, all of these countries have suffered terribly from organized crime. From the fact that at every level of society, right from the top down, through the judicial system, corruption determines what is happening in the society. And when you find that corruption is that deeply entrenched, particularly in the judiciary and within policing, and also in the business sector, you've got a society which is unstable. And that is what Iraq is, and it's going to take a long time for Iraq to be any different. That is, if you even get a deal on, you know, between the Kurds, the Shiites, and the Sunnis. And for anyone to talk about, you know, expanding this conflict into Iran or regime change, you know, the regime change is becoming a euphemism, as we know, for, you know, creating conflict. I think it's crazy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks. I appreciate your call, Fred. Thank you. We got
to
come.
Thanks, Fred. Nice talking to you.
All righty. We'll come back on the other side, short segment, and then we've got to say goodbye to our guest today, Martin Dillon. Formerly with the BBC, and now in this country, he writes for the American Free Press. We'll take this short break. We shall return. Stay tuned.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole Saltlands, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products, created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267.
we are back. Just a couple minutes left in this hour of the National Intel Report. Martin, anybody that has been keeping up and watching the Middle East, and I'll tell you, Ahmadinejad, when he got his press coverage, what was that, about 6 months ago, he visited the United Nations, subsequent interviews on television. This guy, he looks like Bush's alter ego, the evil Bush versus maybe the good side of Bush if he has a good side to him. And even, and I've said this before, for defensive purposes, you know, Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan, they had no role in attacking the United States in September 11, 2001. But what we're looking at their neighbor, Israel, with over 400 nuclear weapons of every imaginable delivery device. And for defensive purposes, if Ahmadinejad and the Iranian government wanted to make a couple of nuclear bombs at, for defensive purposes, I don't see the problem with that. But they're years away from, even if that were their plan to develop nuclear weapons, they're years, according to our own CIA, they're years away from being able to accomplish that.
Yeah. I mean, Ahmadinejad is not Iran. It's like sort of saying, well, George Bush is America. I mean, you know, thankfully George Bush isn't America. And neither was Donald Rumsfeld. In fact, Rumsfeld, I mean, is just like all the rest of us at the moment, you know. He's no longer in control. But the thing is that when you look at the Middle East, it's a very sort of complex tapestry. You've got a younger population in Iran today, and certainly, sure, you have the mullahs. But the problem with the West sometimes is this, that we tend to think that our template of democracy is the one that should be applied everywhere, that it's going to work everywhere, and it doesn't. You know, we thought that, you know, Yeltsin was a great guy in Russia. Well, Yeltsin wasn't. Yeltsin was a drunk most of the time, and he was running his own country into the ground. And there was a country with the incredible...
Was that Yeltsin or Bush you just mentioned?
Well, you know, there's an example of it. And the thing about it is, Yeltsin really wasn't Russia. And eventually, sort of, he disappears. Now, you know, whether you agree with Putin or not, you've got to see that sort of Russia has risen from the ashes like a phoenix economically. Because here's a country with incredible wealth. It's a country we shouldn't sort of, I think, humiliate, because it's a very powerful country sitting there within the greater Europe, the European continent. And maybe we don't agree with everything. Russians have always liked strong leaders. Doesn't necessarily say that we should approve of Putin. And maybe Putin, I mean, is you know, has a too narrow an agenda. But at the same time, I think that we can't therefore say, you know, what we want to do is we want to make that country in our own image and likeness. Because very often people don't appreciate it. They think that we're interfering. And leaders very often use it to sort of stir up their own people and say, well, here's America again interfering, or here's, you know. It's, the thing about it is, I think we've got to be a lot more savvy. We've got to use diplomacy. We've got to use our intelligence. You know, we don't have to sort of use weapons, and we don't have to threaten people. The world will probably change through example. And certainly, it's not that we shouldn't be able to defend ourselves against aggression. We should. But I think at the same time, we have to be a lot more, I think, intelligent about the way that we use our own abilities,
both
politically and militarily and diplomatically.
Well, it's obvious that the Bush administration does not know what the word détente is, nor does he know what foreign policy is.
I think this is probably one of the most, you know, this has been one of the most difficult periods, I think, in American history, particularly in terms of America's image right across the world. I talk to people regularly in Europe, in Western Europe and in Eastern Europe, and I have a lot of friends in Eastern Europe. I've written extensively about organized crime in Eastern Europe. One of the things, people just don't understand it, and people say, well,
we got about 20 seconds left. We got about 20 seconds, Martin.
Yeah, this isn't America. This is George Bush, or let's say it's the shadow president, Dick Cheney.
There you go. Martin Dillon, thank you. Thank you so much. I look forward to more articles in the American Free Press and having you on the program again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, John. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned.